Parking on the dance floor, Axel. Wake him up. He's got a show to do. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth, large and in charge. So large, I need a barge. Sarge, Val, how are you?
Damn good, Dave.
We're trying to wake up Axel Rose here. He's been announcing that he's going to have a tour. Now we got to get him to the show on time. 866-313-3733. I don't know. Go from the top there, Hutch, and let's see what some of the fans say. Johnny, you're on.
Hey, Dave. Axl Rose and Buckethead, they played in either Continental Arena or Madison Square Garden the one night. The next night was supposed to be in Philadelphia.
What happened?
And Axl never showed. And then the promoter canceled the tour.
I wonder if it's possible. Didn't some people sue somebody for being drunk on stage, like in Korn or something?
That was Creed.
Creed. Yeah.
It was Creed, and they had like a class action suit and sued the guy in Creed for throwing a lousy performance and only being on for like three songs or something. Did you get your money back after that show?
A buddy of mine was a huge Axl Rose, Guns N' Roses fan. He had tickets for both shows and was thoroughly pissed off that the Philadelphia show never happened. He loved the way Buckethead played the guitar. It was brutal for him, you know.
Okay, so you say that it's okay. I'm wondering now if it's okay to call it Guns N' Roses simply because Axl is involved. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I would guess so. I mean, Black Sabbath was still called Black Sabbath after Ozzy, you know.
But was it really Black Sabbath?
No, I don't think it was, but the name, it all, I guess legally it depends on who has the rights to the name and its usability. It's like Van Halen, I guess, still had the rights to the name after you left, and I don't consider Van Hagar to be Van Halen.
Now, I'm interested in if there's a truth in advertising issue, because a lot of times people are taking their kids, for example. Now, when you go see the Rolling Stones, a certain percentage of that audience is kids being brought by their parents or even their grandparents.
I think they're missing Bill Wyman, you know?
Say again?
And, you got Mick and you got Keith and you got Charlie, so that's the basis of the band.
Okay, so it's like the drink Fruitopia. As long as 10% real juice is involved, then the rest of it's okay?
I guess.
Considered healthy.
I wouldn't go see Axl with Buckethead. I wouldn't think that to be Guns N' Roses.
No, I would consider it to be something else, something other. And I'm wondering if people are paying the price because they really expect the Guns N' Roses magic. And I don't know if you can get that when you have such a change in members.
Right?
I think if there's
without Slash, I don't think you can get the Guns N' Roses sound. He made the band with his guitar.
It's going to be real interesting to see what happens if Keith Richards leaves the building Elvis style anytime soon. Would Mick and Ron still go on as the Rolling Stones? Does that qualify? It almost kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it would qualify. And you know, Keith really doesn't play that much of the music. Yeah, you know, I don't think he would miss that much in the sound if Keith wasn't there.
Yeah, but it's almost the visual. It's like you kind of expect it to be from something specific. It's like when you buy a baseball that has Ty Cobb's name on it. You follow? It should be his name. It should be something that he wrote. Okay? And if it's not,
his autograph.
Yeah, it should be his autograph. Well, there are a lot of people who claim, well, even if it's a bootleg, if you still get a warm feeling in your heart when you look at it, if you didn't know it's a bootleg, then you got the full impact.
I don't know.
And that's okay. Isn't that what Oprah Winfrey is saying about that fake book that James Fry wrote? that if you got a warm feeling in your stomach when you looked at the book and it helped you feel it, then it's okay if it was a lie.
No, she's actually taken the opposite approach. She does not condone this book whatsoever anymore. Now, I personally think if you got the warm, fuzzy feeling, it was a good read, what's the problem?
Well, then it's just like that baseball. Hold on one second.
I'm on the phone. I'm on the air.
It's my agent. I don't believe that if you got that warm, fuzzy feeling based on an incorrect perception, that it's okay. If you went and you say,
really?
Yeah,
okay.
For example, you get a baseball. It says Babe Ruth on it.
All right.
Half of the sports memorabilia out there now is bootleg garbage, been made fake somewhere in the United States, okay?
All right.
You get that baseball, you pay $500 for it. You look at it, you get a warm feeling. You think about history. You think about the fighting spirit. You think about team spirit. You tell your kids about it. You use it as a lesson. Then you find out that's a bootleg baseball. You're still fine with it? See?
So, a little heartbroken.
Okay.
Disappointed.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now, there are some who would say, well, you still got a warm feeling from it. You still had a reaction. So even though it was fake, it's okay for us to sell it to you. Hold on.
All right.
Now, we're going to write Guns N' Roses on a big marquee. We're going to charge you probably $400 if you're going to sit within spitting distance. Ready? The only one from Guns N' Roses up there is Axl Rose. Is that a legitimate thing, or did you get fooled just a little bit? Turn up the music while she thinks. All right, turn it down. What'd you come up with?
I'm still thinking.
All right, go.
You got fooled.
Okay, go for Pete here, if he's still on line six here. 866-313-3733. I'm David Lee Roth. Pete, are you on?
Yeah, Dave, I'm here.
What's cooking?
Just before the break, I was kind of half asleep. I heard you mention about having to hire a babysitter to get Axl to his shows.
I thought it might be a proposition. What do you think?
Absolutely, because I remember reading a book. I'm a huge Morrison fan, Doors fan, and I remember reading a book some time ago. I believe it's called No One Gets Out of Here Alive.
Okay.
When Jim was at the height of his alcoholism, he was having a lot of trouble getting to his shows. So Robbie and Ray and John decided to hire a quote-unquote babysitter to make sure Jim would show up. So I think, you know, if anything or anyone would need it, it would be Axl. Because if history repeats itself, kind of on a side note, I was a huge Guns N' Roses fan in the early 90s in high school. And I remember getting geared up to see them at Giant Stadium in 1993. It was Faith No More, Metallica, and Guns N' Roses headlining.
This made a big impression on you, I can already tell. Please continue.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a huge Guns N' Roses fan. You know, high school, you're kind of falling to rock and roll, heavy metal, and couldn't wait to see Guns. I mean, Metallica was great. Faith No More, you know, they were good at their time. Couldn't wait to get seeing Guns. We waited for 3 hours because Axl wasn't ready to come out.
And did he finally come out?
Finally came out, Dave. He did about 3 songs. People were booing, throwing stuff on stage. In the middle of Knocking on Heaven's Door, he says a profanity about the crowd, says he's not going to sing anymore, throws the mic down on the stage, and walks off. Duff and Slash are left to play the rest of the, or half of the song by themselves. Duff obviously can't carry the tune. They look at each other and go, guess it's over, sorry. So as I said, if history repeats itself, supposedly Guns N' Roses has a big comeback on MTV Awards a few years ago. Jimmy Fallon says, Guns N' Roses is back, Guns N' Roses is back. And Axl was supposed to start touring the new album, the Chinese, whatever.
Okay, well, wait a second here. At the MTV Awards, Axl came out running, and that was not Guns N' Roses either. That was Buckethead and 14 other people up on stage. And I think Axl is not so much chasing a dream as he is running from one at this point in time. Also, that after that single performance, didn't he just progressively miss everything? And this is a syndrome with people. I'm wondering if there's a brain disconnect going on there, because I don't think it's drugs. Axl was never really a drugs kind of guy. He was a bipolar kind of lithium sort of guy. He, in his first tour, I think that they were going to work with Van Halen or something like that. And there was an issue where Axl had gone off his meds. So, I'm not kidding.
I believe you.
This is standard.
Haven't seen him do an interview. I believe you.
Yeah, this is like the Beach Boys kind of thing. And then he moved away. He moved completely away from Showbiz City. What's that about? He moved to I think, Phoenix, Arizona. That's kind of the great outdoors. That's the great, it's a great city, but it's not showbiz.
What is it about working to achieve your goals to get that famous, and then you want to run away? What is that?
I think it's a self-esteem issue in terms of how you really see yourself.
Okay.
Mirror, mirror on the bathroom sink.
All right.
And if I'm not mistaken, Axl was abused when he was a little kid. Okay? That's of public note.
All right.
All right? So there's a definite short circuit going on in there. I love that music, but that's been such a checkered career that those guys have gone up and down. Also, what happens a lot of times, Val, is that these guys end up making funny money deals behind the scenes. All of a sudden, somebody's not getting their publishing check, or the one member of the band discovers that the other is making twice the royalty, or that the others are all cleaning up and the other is wondering why he has to check his money every time he gets a tank of gas, okay?
Right.
Happens frequently. I don't care if it's Cool in the Gang or the mighty Van Halen. You suddenly discover, hey, how come you got those two-tone shoes? And I'm still sewing holes in my socks, so to speak, kind of an issue. Oh, yeah, then it makes it almost impossible for the rhythm section to face the guitarist or for the guitarist to face the brass section because now you have a money issue.
And if it's not worked out, you can't go back and fix it. Once it's been discovered, the problem, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
Those are major issues there. Let's give me Melanie here one time here. Hutch, if you would. Melanie, you're on Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Talk to me. Melanie,
Hi. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm great, sweetie. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to mention that you were talking about if, you know, only one member of the original group is actually going to perform, is it still that group? And I wanted to say there's actually a piece of legislation in Pennsylvania right now that's going against that. It's called the Doo-Wop Bill, although it's going to cover all different kinds of groups. And unless, you know, it has to have at least one original member of the group, and that person has to have the right to carry on. It's called the Truth in Music Advertising Act.
How do you decide which member of the group has the responsibility of carrying on the glory?
I have no idea. I guess, you know, you would have to have some sort of legal right. I mean, after your group breaks up, you know, somebody's got the rights to the music. Somebody has the rights to, you know, all that stuff.
Okay, so, because there's an interesting case with what I call Creedence Clearwater Revoked, in that John Fogerty, you know, the guy who had the raspy voice, wrote all the lyrics, wrote all the music, sang all the stuff, sat in the studio, produced it right alongside the producer, okay? He was the guy who led the way for the band, et cetera, et cetera. The rest of the guys copped his publishing, okay? There was a whole big issue there where he lost the songwriting royalties. There went to his brother, I think, and then on his brother's deathbed he refused to relinquish, etc. So there's a major bitterness there. The main guy is not in the band, the guy who wrote it, sang it, produced it, etc., etc., yet those other characters are still traveling along calling themselves Creedence Clearwater Revisited. I call it Creedence Clearwater Revoked. Do you think that's acceptable, even though none of them sang or wrote any of the material, for them to carry on with the name?
Well, I think, I mean, John Fogerty had such an iconic sound that I don't really think you could separate him from CCR. And really, I mean, then it becomes a question of what the market will bear. I mean, I wouldn't buy tickets to that. You know, maybe there are some people out there that are so nostalgic. You know, these are the people that go to 1964 every year that would buy the tickets. But, I mean, it wouldn't be that, because he was really the soul of that. You know what I mean? I mean, there are some groups that you maybe could argue that losing one member isn't going to change the whole group. But, I mean, and some people might argue that having Axl Rose would make it Guns N' Roses again. I mean, I wouldn't personally feel that way. But, I mean, I guess it becomes then, you know, a question of what people are actually going to pay to listen to.
I think it's a question of if you even know the difference. A lot of times you haven't even got an idea. Is this the full band? Who is in the band? Maybe there's two of them left in the band. Maybe two and a half. Maybe he's in a wheelchair. Maybe.
You still have to pay the same ticket charge that you did whenever the original band played.
Well, that's the idea.
I think you should get a discount.
Then you're talking about advertising a different product here. No, you're going to pay the full whack. You're going to pay full freight for this. That's the idea behind this here. Go for one more here. Give me one more time here. Just pick one up there, Hutch. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Truth in Advertising. Roth Radio, you're good to go. Go ahead.
Dave.
Talk, Don. You're on.
Hey, at one point there were two groups touring as the Temptations.
Okay. When was this?
This was back in the 70s. It was after they had kicked David Ruffin out.
Okay. Slow down. David Ruffin was the guy with the tenor voice who sang the leads. Go ahead.
Right. And then I believe they fired Eddie Kendrick. And
no, Eddie died. Somebody dumped him out of a car, another cocaine overdose. Eddie died from freebasing, and they threw him out of a car in front of Roosevelt Hospital up the street here in New York City. But just clarifying, go ahead.
Okay, well, before it got to that point, the two of them got together and said, well, why is it Otis and Melvin can tour as the Temptations? We're Temptations, too. They told us we were Temptations for life. And the two of them got other singers, and they went out on the road as the Temptations.
This is what I call the Lassie theory. Actually, I follow the Lassie theory. I see Val looking at me strangely. There are three of me, actually, touring.
Okay.
And one of them is a girl. But I accept that from a dog show. It's okay that I don't recognize Lassie from the other Lassie.
That's all right. That's all right.
But according to what, you know, he's reflecting on, I have an issue with that. Didn't Diana Ross stub her professional toe trying to tell everybody that it was the Supremes, even though she was the only preem there? She was a Sue. The preems were gone. I think they'd actually been fired, and one of them was struggling in a housing project or something
right,
like this.
Right. Yeah.
Same, right. Same thing. How about Leonard Skinner? Is either Leonard or Skinner still alive? No, really. Are they? I haven't I have the vaguest idea.
I couldn't tell you. That's it. Ooh, those are names I hadn't heard of in
I know
years.
That the singer's brother is actually doing the material here. So, you know, that calls to mind when an artist dies. For example, we just got a call from a publicist or whatever that George Harrison's wife is carrying on his legacy. I don't know if she's making music now, but she's got artwork and photography, etc. And I see, well, you know, Yoko Ono decided to carry on the legacy of John Lennon or whatever. Is it the same thing?
Well, and that's the question. Do we carry on the legacy? Because if somebody doesn't, then these bands, they just get buried. Generations down the road, haven't heard them, can't hear them, don't know anything about them.
Well, what happens, for example, when I went to see Al Green at the Wiltern Theater in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, there were a lot of moms with a lot of girls who looked like they were just about 12 years old, okay?
Right.
And they were obviously teaching their daughters, this is the sound of love. This is the look of a man. This, I even sound like a commercial, don't I? This is the sound of love. This is the way a man should talk to a woman. And they have the real deal up there. Al is up there. It's really him singing. It's not a tape-recorded voice or whatever. Well, if you go to the Rolling Stones, well, these days, if you go to a U2 concert also, there are a lot of parents bringing their kids.
Did Bon Jovi 2 weeks ago in Dallas.
Same thing.
Amazing. You run the gamut from folks in their 50s, 60s with their, you know, some folks with their kids that look like they're in grade school.
Okay, the kids don't know the difference. They're just following mom and dad into the park, okay? And whoever is on stage is just equitably digested right there. Doesn't matter. Boom. It's inhaled, okay? No matter how you explain to a kid what well, that's not the real band, honey. That's just the name. And then you're going to have to explain that, well, it's kind of like an orchestra. Even though all the original guys who wrote the music are dead, even though the original guys who sang the music or recorded the music are dead, it's every bit as good. And that kid is going to look at you the same way you're looking at me right now.
Or honey, these kids are broke. They're trying to make a little bit more cash.
In the mornings.
Roth, 6 a.m.
Don't forget, 8:15, Omarosa, Manigault Stallworth. There's a $50 heavy lifting name. She's going to be calling in. She's the famous face from The Apprentice, Don Trump's reality series, and she is teaching a course in reality TV. We're going to have a few questions for her, and you're going to call in and ask her questions as well. She's going to be calling in at about 8:15. Also, right about 8:45, we've got Elizabeth Hayes. She's writing a column for the New York Post, and I think we're going to discuss why married men are hot. Do you find married men hot, Val?
You know, married men not hot for me.
Not hot?
Not hot for me.
Well, it's like me dating lesbians. You kind of know how it's going to wind up, that it's not going to wind up.
Yeah, and I'm a no-commitment kind of gal, but, you know, hey, that's no. When I want you, I want you.
Well, if you're saying you're not a no-commitment kind of gal?
I am a no-commitment kind of gal.
Then married guys would be for you.
Well, yeah, but I am very demanding in that when I want my man, I want my man. I don't want him to have to check with his wife to see if he can come over and help me out.
Half the guys I know, half the guys who I know who are married would be there at 7:45.
All right,
stuff.
All right. right.
Okay, Roth Radio. We're talking about Axl Rose and Truth in Advertising with all of these bands. I asked, is Leonard or Skinnerd actually in the band? I see somebody wrote something up here about the band Chicago. Go from the top here. Somebody is mad at Mark Anthony. This is the Boricua singer, huh? Tracy, are you there?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly, Tracy. Share with us. Go ahead.
All right. What happened was I was all excited. My friend and I put money down on a concert for Mark Anthony at Jones Beach.
You're talking about Mark Anthony, who is married to J-Lo, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and he sings primarily in Espanol, see?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay, go ahead.
So when I got to the concert, there was a few guys opening up for him, and they were singing in Spanish. I said, all right, well, you know, hey, they look good. They're wearing leather. I'll go with it. So then I wait for him to get on, and it's all in Spanish. Now, all the audience is really feeling it and getting into it. And I said, I can't even get into this. I can't even understand the guy.
You didn't know that he sings in Spanish before you went to the show, correct?
Well, I wasn't that ignorant. I knew he did speak Spanish, but I didn't think the whole concert was going to be in Spanish.
And the entire thing was in Spanish?
He did sing one song in English.
Okay, look, I just want to say to you on behalf of Mark, desafortunadamente no hablo suficiente español para hablar contigo solamente la lengua, pero aquí lo tienes, mija. The gift de música.
Cockroach Anthony.
You thought I'd send you right back there. So what, do you feel that there was a difficulty in Truth in Advertising? Because I only know him to speak in Spanish, to sing in Spanish.
There was a few people there that were American, white-looking, and, you know, primarily there was Spanish. But I even said to them in the parking lot, aren't you annoyed at this whole thing? They said, yeah, I didn't understand any of it.
It could have been worse. You could have wound up with some of the lap dancers that find me over at Scores on Friday night. You'd have to fight it out in Serbo-Croatian.
I would have had a better time, got my money's worth.
Thanks for calling. That's an interesting call right there, because I only know Mark para cantar en español solamente. He only sings in Spanish. That I've seen it on the pay-per-view, and that is his whole angle. He's one of the most popular voices in Espanol.
But he's trying to make a move into the American audience. So that's why he put out the American album. So, you got to do a little mix and match. I'm with her.
Did he sing the last album completely in English? Completely in English?
You got me on that one. But I do know that he's made a major attempt into working into the American audience.
Why would he have to sing in English if he's making a major attempt at the American audience today, Texas?
Well, and you know what? As a matter of fact, if the music is good enough for me, I don't have to understand the words.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You can hear that we do our station IDs in 14 different languages here. It's everything from Swahili to Norwegian. Because I remember when I first started touring back with Van Halen, you only had certain radio stations in certain parts of the world. There was no dance station, you know, for upbeat groove stuff in Los Angeles. You had to wait until you came to New York for WKTU, and you would tape record it on the cassette in your stereo and take that around the world with you. Or you would have pop stations in Tokyo or Hamburg, Germany, or down in South Africa or wherever.
Okay.
And the languages were always they were even dialectic. You didn't even get Arabic. You had Pashtun or Dari Persian or whatever. And the only things you would understand in English would be the brand names. And the guy would go, Nunga de Sikalanga Barkende Pepto Bismol.
Okay.
And it got that exact reaction out of me every single time. David Lee Roth. And you could pick out that thing. And I always thought that was the most intriguing sound. It was music. A lot of times, I don't know what's being played instrumentally in the background.
Right.
Listen to what's going on in the background. Can you tell what instruments are being played?
A little marimba in there somewhere.
There's nothing real in that track. That's an entirely synthetic track that's played entirely on a keyboard.
But I'm moving.
Ah. Uh-huh. Well, that's organic material that you're moving. We're using a synthetic device to trigger your organic material.
Uh-oh. Whatever it takes, baby.
My point is that you don't know what the instrument is in the background anymore. That's not really a drum. That's a synthesizer. That's not really a glockenspiel. Who can even spell that? Much less knows what one is when you hear it, right? So the idea is that if you don't know, does it really matter? Okay? If you don't know what that instrumentation is, it doesn't really matter, does it? So,
if
you hear something in a language you don't understand, if it still gives you that emotional feeling, if it still makes you feel warm and fuzzy, if it still triggers your Speedos, that's a technical term.
Perfect example, Santana.
Boom.
Oh, ho, ho. Can't understand half of the lyrics, but I don't care. I'm up and dancing.
Most of the time, there is no lyrics.
Well, yeah.
Santana, he's like a hot sauce. Goes with breakfast, and it goes arguably with your shot at tequila during happy hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Or breakfast.
But you don't need the language. The same way your house pets don't need to hear English to know you're drunk. Oh, yeah. You can talk all you want. They're not listening.
Yes, they are.
They're just watching.
Matter of fact, they're listening now. Hi, girls.
Anyway, give us a number five up here, Hutch. 866-313-3733. Adam, talk to me. You're on.
Hey, Dave. Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, here's the scenario. You're a diehard fan. You've seen the band, whatever band it is, 20, 30 times. You go to a concert, you want to hear the obscure songs, the B-sides, the stuff they never do. Now, of course, you're a casual listener who goes to see a band. You want to hear the hits. You're the band. What do you play? Obviously, most of the bands are playing the hits. But what audience do you target?
Okay, do you have a reflection on which audience they should target?
As a hardcore fan, of course, you want to hear the real, obscure stuff. You know, throwing a few wacky covers, throwing some stuff that they've never played off of, like the first album that did nothing. Of course, for a cat, personally, that's what I'd want to hear. But it depends, of course, on the band. I mean, I've seen Springsteen. While I would consider myself, let's say, a casual listener, but I've got most of his albums. I want to hear the hits. I don't want to hear kind of the 7-minute yawn rock song.
Okay, let me reflect on that, because you have two approaches when you get past, let's say, the 7-year mark in your career. Requisite career these days lasts for 3.5 summers. That's it. Most of the faces that you hear today on your radio that you're seeing on the screen are going to be gone in 3.5 years. That's just the regular norm. Once you make it past, say, 7 summers and you've got 4 or 5 albums going there, you have a choice of exactly what you just described. And now, on top of that, you have a choice of how often you're actually going to go and work. How often are you actually going to go on the road and play? Well, you can do it like the Rolling Stones, who go out, every fourth year, something like that, and you never see hide nor hair of them unless there's some kind of a scandal in between. Or you can do like Willie Nelson, who is a perennial. Well, that's because he has to be, since his tax his tax scenario. But he's everywhere. He's everywhere all the time. He tours year-round. We know him from playing a lot of the same circuit, some of the great outdoor sheds that we do, and as well as the clubs, throughout Europe, etc.
He's got to pay for his pot.
Well, allegedly. And what happens is that he's going to come through town here in New York maybe 3 times in 1 year. If you watch for him somewhere within driving distance, mm-hmm. he'll be over in Sayreville, New Jersey, or he'll be upstate, somewhere that's 1.5 hours driving distance, or out at Jones Beach or whatever, as opposed to just again and again in Manhattan. But he'll play 3 times, maybe 4 times in this general area. Maybe he comes through with B.B. King, does a show. Maybe he comes through again the following summer and he shows up on the Bob Dylan tour. Bob plays one set, he plays another. Then he shows up as the tribute to Les Paul, and they do a show at the a 4-night stand over at the Lincoln Jazz Center or something like this. You'll see him 3 or 4 times, and he knows that coming in, so he's going to alter that song list routinely. Mm-hmm. You become familiar faces in the audience. But if you're only going to travel through town once every 4 summers or like that, then you got to do the greatest hits, because, the absence, it goes out of you, and you start to request those kinds of things. I think the bands who claim that they are so glued into the music, the best way to judge is how often do you see them? How often do they really travel? Have you ever noticed also that in all these reality series with musicians and singers, whether it's Jessica Simpson or Ozzy Osbourne, that there's never any music playing in the background at their houses, ever. There's never any music in their car playing, ever. There's never any music in their private lives. They're taking showers with no music. How does a singer take a shower without singing? And how do you know what to sing unless you're playing the stereo? And how do you learn new music unless you're playing that stereo incessantly? And when I find a new song like that, Michelle Branch, I'm Feeling Good or whatever, I'll listen to that 75 times. That's one long water bill.
I do. I get stuck on a CD. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I call it immersion. So you not only know the song, you become part of it. You know every little part. I still am an air guitar player. I'm still an air drummer. I'm still a background singer. I still conduct the brass section, and it all happens naked in the shower. Watch me now, baby.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
Roth, 6 a.m. You are tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about Little Fire Scarecrow?
Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. We're talking about truth in advertising. I see somebody even put up the name of the band Chicago was up there. Give us Bobby. He says bands are corporations. So does that mean that you can just change the people and the corporation hangs? Is that like Harvard Law School, where if you change the professors, then it's still just as good? The quality of the education remains? The quality of the performance remains?
You'll pay the same.
Especially if they're using tape. God, never a good time to bring that up. Bobby, you're on Roth Radio. Yeah. You're good to go.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I think a lot of these bands, especially some of the older bands, are like corporations, and they've got a commitment, whether there's a contract signed or not, to produce what the corporation has produced in the past.
And so your reflection is that it's okay that even though most of the members are gone, that the corporate name resides and that it's the same product?
It's what the fans are expecting. They're not expecting exactly the performers, per se, but they're expecting the songs. What was produced is what they're coming to see and what they're paying for. For example, I went to see Traffic 8-9 years ago.
Sure.
Now, Traffic was, two players were in it, Jim Capaldi and the lead guitarist.
But who was the singer in that? That was Steve Winwood the singer
now,
in that.
Here's the thing.
Was Steve he in the band?
Was not billed. Lo and behold, while we're sitting in the audience, word goes around, Steve Winwood's in the audience. All of a sudden, he gets called up on stage to do 7 songs with the band.
Okay.
I turned to my friend and I said, you'll never see this, because there may be conflicting contracts with the band or members of the band that they can't legally play together. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you would understand, but the average listener doesn't understand what goes on behind the scenes with contracts, negotiations, what you can and cannot do, and why a lot of these bands can't play. The Who haven't been the Who for how long?
Well, that's arguable, because the key members of The Who, the guitar player and the singer, are very well intact, okay?
Absolutely. I would agree, and I see them quite often. Then again, the engine behind The Who was who?
Well, I think the engine behind The Who was Pete Townshend on the guitar and the singer. Now, the band, when you have a short band like that, 4-piece band, and you change one member of it, it's like playing tic-tac-toe. Miss one square, and you've lost the game, okay? And that's one of the reasons that Zeppelin did not continue, that there is a definable difference in the instrumentalists, okay? But what you're describing as far as bands not being contractually able to perform together, that's pretty rare. Usually, it's perceived as an opportunity to promote one another. That if one member, like Steve Winwood, who hasn't been making a lot of music recently, is out of the loop, so to speak, and his band decides to go on and play, okay, great, you know, let him get up there, let him do his songs. He can guest sing on their record or do something live with them. They can do a pay-per-view, something of that nature, because the record company folks, the suits behind the scenes, so to speak, would say, hey, this is a promotional effort, just the same way that we see in hip-hop today. That is a complete cross-section. You know, everybody is jamming with everybody. Every single famous record today of rap or hip-hop has five different artists from three different record companies. And it's mutually beneficial.
Right, sure.
You know, so I don't know that it's so much that it's the companies who are preventing the musicians from getting back together as it is the musicians. And usually, it's the money. Usually there's something happened behind the scenes where some publishing was redistributed or somebody finds out that the other guy is making six times as much as he was, and that causes a lot of difficulty backstage. It becomes like high noon at the craft services table when you discover that the bass player is driving around in a Rolls Royce and you're pushing a golf cart, so to speak. And this is a traditional story, again, whether it's Kool & the Gang or modern popular rock bands, etc. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Roger, he wants to talk about the Doors. Roger, you're on Roth Radio. You're in the spotlight. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Great, then.
Good. Oh, yeah, perfect example, the Doors. Okay, Jim dies, and they try to keep the name, and I saw him at Carnegie Hall right after he died.
How were they?
They were horrible. They had that album come out, Other Voices, and they were okay, but Ray was trying to sing, and he's trying to do Light My Fire, and I had to actually get up and leave. I couldn't take it.
Well, a great deal of The Doors is performance theater. Half of his career he spent throwing up, so
yeah.
I'm going to have to use that in a positive vein as theater.
Yeah, theater it is, but still, I mean, I don't think they should have kept the name, and now I guess they've been forced to change the name because John Densmore is suing them. And I guess they're called now Riders of the Storm.
Now we're getting into a spiral here.
Right.
It sounds like to me. What about when Queen went and had a variety of different singers? They had a big tribute to Queen at the Wembley Stadium a decade ago. And it was everybody from the kid in Def Leppard to, George Michael to whoever. And they did a great job of reworking Freddie's songs, Freddie's parts.
But billed it as a tribute.
Right. Yeah, I believe it was a tribute to Queen.
It was a tribute.
And do you believe that that's... If it uses the name and it says it's a tribute to Queen and it lists all those names, is that acceptable to you?
Well, I think if it's a tribute and they do it right, it's okay. But I don't think they should take Ian Astbury and put him in as a lead singer and call him the Doors.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
That's wrong.
100%. Why do you think they're doing that?
To keep the name, to keep it alive, and to keep them selling tickets,
Do you think they really felt that they were going to transcend the past, that they were going to transcend history with something new, or are they just playing ostrich and closing their eyes and hoping for the best?
I think you're right, hoping for the best. They got their heads in the ground like ostriches,
Well, sounds like you're going to deliver a swift kick. Roger, thanks for calling Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. All right, let's go to the land of heavy metal here. Megadeth. Mike, talk to me. Roth Radio, you're on.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Extraordinary, my friend. What's cooking?
Awesome. The thing is that you're talking about, Axl Rose. There can't be, one guy that runs a band. But, Dave Mustaine, since day one has been, the leader of that band. Everyone focuses on him, I just don't. I don't know if I can agree. Axl Rose is, what people go to see. I mean, Slash, awesome, So, you want to go see Axl. He's, the emotional part of the band,
No, I don't know. I'm not sure I know what you mean. So explain. So you're saying that if one person was in charge of the whole band and it was all his idea, then it's okay for him to walk off with the name of the group?
That's what I guess. Because Dave Mustaine, he has his...
Did we just lose him? I'm preparing for a backwards devil message, even as we speak.
Oh, no, man, but Megadeth is Megadeth.
Roth Radio. Let's get this ghetto chariot moving here. Somebody else says the band name is a money issue. Will, talk to me. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. I'm going to have to charge you $450 to sit this close, friend. Go ahead. You're on.
Hey, how y'all doing? It's great topic y'all on today. It's Will, North Carolina. I'm actually driving to Florida to pick y'all up. I got just a quick statement to make about that. It's dealing with, actually, my opinion, is money and more. And it's this talent thing is really fighting a battle with it. Like, for instance, I was a struggling artist at one time. And when you got a group together, once that group departs, it's no longer a group. And the other gentleman was commenting on the topic of if one of the members are still part of the group or were part of the group, they can still carry on the name. I don't think that would be right. Use your talents and... whatever talent you have, let the public see that so they can like you for your group or your name. You shouldn't try to just like what I call freeload on the talents of another person who is not in the group anymore, either passed away. So my comment would be basically let what happened happen and now move on.
I agree.
Everybody's trying to ride on a pass, you know, just move on.
I agree with you, and I like the word freeload. Because 9 times out of 10, the characters who remain were not the main contributors. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, that's where the cash flows to, okay? Because the artists who spend the most time working their muse, whether it's the instrumentalists, whether it's the lyricists, whether it's the person who created the stage show and the general vibe of the show, a la Alice Cooper or David Bowie when he was Ziggy Stardust or something like that, those are the ones who think about business the least. The ones who contribute the least in terms of the studio, the actual compositional writing, the theory of it, the orchestration or whatever, those are the ones who spend the most time on the phone to their attorney.
Are you speaking from experience?
Oh, absolutely I am. You better believe I am. I found out, you know, that we got an email here just a while ago where somebody asked, what was my lawsuit against Van Halen?
Mm-hmm.
And what was this, about 3-4 years ago? I thought that I had caught the evil record company you know, running off with my royalties. So I filed a lawsuit thinking that I was going to nail Warner Brothers to the wall. Little did I know that the Van Halens had gotten a raise in their royalties about 10 years ago that somebody forgot to tell me about, okay?
Imagine that.
Yeah. Today, if I make, today, the bass player makes 3 times what I make on all those old records. Today, if you buy Van Halen 1 or 1984, the drummer will make 3 times what I make. If I make a dime, he'll make 30 cents. If I make 30 cents, the drummer will make a dollar. If I make 30 cents, the guitar player will make a dollar.
And how does that make you feel, Dave?
Well, I take the high road, okay?
Absolutely.
I'm a simple guy. And I call the Van Halens once, twice a year now, mm-hmm. and say, guys, let's get this ghetto chariot rolling. We've all made a lot of cash. We've all perhaps taken some misguided information. We've all followed down some interesting paths, and I can't get calls back. I got to assume that it's a little bit difficult to make eye contact when you find out something like that. And I've taken a very beatific kind of approach. So, hey guys, we'll just make it right. We'll just re-square the paper up, you know, you share a dollar, give it back, whatever, and let's go out on the road and do the right thing. But once you get caught with your hand in the pot, ouch, real tough to make eye contact with somebody. And I find that this happens with a lot of bands. Now that I've been through the circuit with the attorneys, you know, and the accountants and everything, and I'm finding out that this happens to so many rock bands, so many soul bands. All the hip hoppers go through this kind of rigmarole, et cetera, et cetera. So it can steer pretty interesting here. Anyways, I'm going to call my accountant. Don't go away.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.